Hi, folks. I'm Jelaine Fenner with my co-host,
Tom Majeure.
And Tom, we are doing a four-part series called Is Your Estate Planned?
That's right. We're trying to demystify the wills and trusts process, the estate planning process. We got a couple experts here.
Yes, we do. And we did segment one was about last will and testaments. And today we're talking about segment two regarding trusts. And we have with us Joel Nephew, who is the Director of Planned Giving and Trust Services for the Michigan Conference of Seventh-day Adventists.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And then, of course, we have an attorney who specializes in estate planning. That is Matt Ramosco.
Good to be here. Thank you.
I should be saying your name right by now, shouldn't I? And we've asked them lots of questions. We did a Strong Tower Radio Today overview. That's why now we're really delving into what we talked about. Today, so we're talking about trust. So, Matt, what is a trust?
So, I'm going to give you the standard definition. Standard definition is it's an agreement where a person or company holds property for the good of another. Now, here's the realistic. It's an agreement between you and yourself. And it's a...
Is that possible?
It really is. It really is. You don't have to be a split personality or anything like that. It's a definition one of my old law partners came up with, and it's so true. I'm coming up with a document called a trust. It's going to be an agreement. And since I'm drafting it, and most of the time I'm the beneficiary and I'm the trustee, it's just an agreement between me and myself. And a lot of times people fear trust, but at the end of the day, it's just a written contract.
So if I'm making it with myself, why do I need to make it?
Because at one point you might become sick or unable to act, and sooner or later, probably die.
So this is kind of your voice when you can't speak?
This is. So this gives other people instructions as to what to do with your assets.
And this trust then, it is always part of a will, or it should always be part of a will?
Great question. So there's a number of different types of trust. Some trusts are buried inside of a will. We call them testamentary trusts. And you see a lot of this with younger people. They may have young children. They want to do a will, but if their children are under a certain age, they may not want the children to receive their assets at that time. That's the very simplest of trust. It may or may not be used because, let's say, I put in my testamentary trust, my will, that if my children are under the age of 23, the assets will be held in a trust for them. Well, when I pass away, my children are in their 50s. That's not needed anymore. The other type of trust that we kind of look at is we break down whether they're revocable or irrevocable.
Okay, so you got to explain the difference because sometimes when you hear irrevocable, you're thinking, well, it can't be revoked. That makes sense to me. But
sounds permanent to me.
So explain.
It is. It is permanent. And so once you sign that document, you cannot change the language.
That's an irrevocable.
It's irrevocable. But there are certain times that you're going to want it irrevocable. And some of those reasons may be it's holding insurance for, let's say, the payment of taxes. You might have a charitable thought that you want this always to be in a charity or to be given to an entity. And you may be in a situation where you're concerned that someone in the future may want to change it. Say you're in a second marriage situation and you don't want your current wife or family members to change your trust after the fact.
You've placed assets in a trust. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And it's an irrevocable trust. The trust says what it is, if it's revocable and irrevocable.
Yes.
Okay. So right now we're talking about irrevocable. So you have this trust that you've placed assets, irrevocable. And then, yeah, you've gotten remarried. That trust, that tells what's going to happen. Your wife or husband that you've remarried, their name isn't mentioned in there. They have nothing to do with that trust.
Correct.
Okay. So now what's a revocable trust?
Revocable trusts are really the majority of trusts, and that is you can amend them at any time. Statistically, if you do a trust before the age of 40, you'll probably amend it up to 6 times in your lifetime. After 50, it's usually 3 times statistically. So most of the time, you will see the trust are revocable, and they'll change because your circumstances or your assets will change during your lifetime.
So I use this irrevocable trust, and, you know, I've got remarried now, so I have this spouse that cannot do anything with this irrevocable trust, but I want to change it. What happens?
You can go to the court and say, Judge, I really made a mistake here. And the court does have some authority to amend a revocable trust.
Irrevocable
trust. And in doing so, you're going through a lot of expense. You're going through a lot of time. So we very much caution people, don't go into an irrevocable trust unless you absolutely are sure of the circumstances.
Okay, that's why you said majority of trusts are called revocable trusts.
Correct.
So when does a trust become effective?
The moment it's signed.
Okay.
So when we talked about wills in the other segment, wills are effective upon a person's death. Trusts are effective during a person's lifetime and after they pass.
So it's almost kind of like a contract. Does a contract expire once a person passes? Or
not all the time.
Okay.
Many times you see land contracts where the person could pass away and the people are still making the land contract payments in real estate.
So it's closer to a contract.
It is.
So what are the benefits of having a trust versus not having a trust?
So the benefits of having a trust is you really sit down and spend a lot of time focusing on your assets, making determinations as to where your assets are going to go during your lifetime and on your death. So it gives you a time to really reflect on your current life and what your life will be in the future.
That goes back to one of Pastor Nephew's favorite things is stewardship, and is you're looking and making a plan for the present and you're making it for the future. Does a trust avoid probate?
Generally, yes. Why I say generally is how a trust works is you have to transfer your assets into your trust. You have to retitle it. So think of your trust as an entity. We know of entities like corporations or LLCs. It's its own legal device. So what I do if I have real estate, I deed my real estate into my trust. If I have a bank account, I transfer it from my personal name to my trust's name. So you, what's called fund or put your assets into a trust. The problem ends up being is, unfortunately, human nature being the way it is, only about 20% of the people do this correctly. A statistic I recently read that said 80% of individuals do not fund their trust adequately or correctly.
So now I have a question, because usually a lawyer's involved, an attorney, to draw up trusts, isn't that correct?
Usually, yes.
So then why aren't they funded right?
Well, I know our experience in my department, many people, it may have been funded correctly at the beginning, but as time progresses and then they buy another house in Florida and they sell this one in Michigan and then they buy another one in Michigan and then now these are not in the trust because it's kind of like out of sight, out of mind. They just don't think about it ever again, because as we talked earlier, sometimes they're kind of pressured into getting a trust because of, you know, peer pressure of others, or they heard a scary story about probate and they think, well, you got to avoid that at all costs, so we got to have a trust. So that's, you know, that's how it can play out sometimes. And it's like, well, no, these things aren't in. At one time it was, but now it's, you know, basically a dry trust.
The other thing that could happen is there's still form trusts out there, internet trusts. So somebody goes through the effort, completes the form correctly, but doesn't even have the knowledge that they're supposed to properly transfer the assets in. And the way we resolve this is we do what's called a pour-over will. And all the pour-over will says is this: there's any assets still in my name at the time of my death, those assets will be probated and transferred right to my trust.
So, okay, let's talk about this a little bit about probate. The trusts do avoid probate. Is that a yes or no?
Yes.
Okay.
If funded correctly.
Yes and no.
Yes, it can, as long as it was done correctly.
Yes.
But if it's defective, it'll have to go through probate.
Correct.
So now, talking about probate, so can, like, and this is why people are afraid. They've heard the IRS or, you know, your state, they're going to take half the asset.
That's just not true. And so what that came about with is when I first started practicing law, the federal estate tax started at $600,000. and the rate above that was 50%. So if I had assets of $600,000 or below, the IRS was never involved. State of Michigan wasn't involved. There'd be no tax. Inheritance tax is what usually people call it. If I go to $700,000, there's $100,000 above.
That's what's taxed.
That's what's taxed. And so what a lot of times, this was a really good marketing tool to say, generally, the government or the IRS or the state's going to take half of your assets. The rest of the story wasn't told.
Mm-hmm. So, like for Michigan right now, what is the asset figure?
Over $11 million.
Oh, most of us don't have that. Yeah, okay.
So, Joel, what assets should be placed in a trust?
Simple answer is everything, except your car, and then any tax-deferred retirement fee funds, things like that, they're tax-deferred. Those do not need to be. Your life insurance policy does not need to be because you name a beneficiary on that.
What about your principal residence?
Definitely.
So if you sell that, do you got to take that back out of the trust?
And I'm going to look to Matt on this, but either you take it out or you sell it through the trust, and there's a process there with some more documentation that has to be provided to the title company.
So if you got a will, and we'll defer to Matt, but if you've got a will, do you need to put your house as your primary residence into the trust, or does that kind of go through the wills trust?
I'm going to want somebody to have the ability to sell my house or to pay the taxes to maintain that house. So again, the big difference between a trust and a will is only effective upon death. Trust is effective during lifetime and after death.
So what about businesses? Because a lot of people have a business. It should be in a trust?
Absolutely. So if you're incorporated, the shares of your business should be transferred to your trust. If you're an LLC, the units of the business should be put in the trust. And what you really want to do is you want to make a list of all of your assets, and they should fit in only two categories. Number one is in the trust, named in the trust, or number two, with a beneficiary like Joel was saying.
So how do people figure out if there's a beneficiary or there's not a beneficiary?
Great question. What you really have to do is look at the asset. And dealing with Joel's office is they give a really detailed intake sheet. And they'll ask about your assets and how they're held. If they're an asset that's held with a beneficiary, sometimes you have to do homework. You have to call your insurance agent and say, hey, by the way, do I have a beneficiary for my insurance policy? So it is a little bit of homework. And that's what sometimes people don't like doing trust is there's a lot more work involved.
So I'm just thinking, we own a farm and lots of tractors on a farm. They don't have a title. So what do we do? I mean,
so as part of your estate plan, I do a document which is entitled Assignment of Personal Property. So you would sign this document that says, I assign all the personal property I have now or in the future to my trust. So when you trade in the tractor or buy a new piece of equipment, that subsequent piece of equipment is automatically in your trust based on that document.
If your estate is, you mentioned $11 million, if it's less than $11 million, do you still need a trust?
You do. There's a couple reasons why you would want trusts. Number one is to avoid probate, which isn't as bad as most people think it is. Number two is if you want to put some time frames to gifts. So for example, my children, I may decide that I want to make sure that they receive gifts over their lifetime or later in their life. Financial decisions that you make at sometimes 18 or 19 are much different than what you would in your 20s or even 30s. The other reason that you may want to do a trust, and you should, is if you're dealing with somebody that's got special needs that are receiving any type of state or federal benefits.
So let me follow up. The children are... There's no concern about time frames anymore. They're age of accountability and responsibility. And the assets are, again, under $11 million. Is there a reason for a trust?
In my mind, no. I think trusts are really overused.
So you just have the will stating everything instead of a trust.
And one other thing, Matt, if I had properties in, let's say, Florida, Michigan, and Arizona, that might be something that I might want to have a trust so I don't have to open probate in all those places.
Definitely. Yeah. And, you know, the use of a trust is really fact specific. And that's why I always tell people, be careful on your internet searches. Be careful on talking to friends. You shouldn't have a trust because your friend has one. But the fact that your friend doesn't have a trust, maybe you do need one. Let's say you have a family farm that you want to protect. Let's say you have a family business that is hard to determine the value, that you really don't want to value that for probate reasons.
You don't want to have to liquidate the business because somebody's passed.
Correct. Or you have property in different states. So that's why it's so important to go to a professional and say, these are my needs. And really, when we talk about estate planning, the first question that you usually ask are, what's your goal and what's your needs? Because that really defines the documents that you need.
So what I've heard you say so far is that transferring assets into the trust is relatively easy. It is easy as a piece of paper signing it and over to the trust, or?
Yeah, it's basically, you know, like your house, you would quick claim deed that over to the trust.
What is a quick claim deed?
It's a document, Matt, you can I'm sure, discern this better than I can. It's basically a legal document saying that you are giving the ownership of that house over to someone else.
Without going through probate.
Without going through probate. And it, in this case, it's the name of the trust.
Yes. And the only difference between a quitclaim deed and a warranty deed is I can give you a quitclaim deed for the Strong Tower radio building. Now, I've got to tell the listeners I don't have any interest. But whatever interest I do have, I can transfer to somebody legally. Where with a warranty deed, I'm warranting that I have good title, and if there's an issue that ends up happening, I will defend you.
Just to let our listeners know that the Strong Tower Radio is not a corporation per se, and so that illustration doesn't quite...
Or a nonprofit.
Absolutely. But, you know, for lack of a better example...
You have to have a trust. So when it comes to real estate, then it would be... Like, okay, Tom's saying, you know, him and his wife own his house. That's what is deeded. Now they're going to make up a trust. What's the trust going to be called?
That's a great question. A lot of times we use the name of the individual. So mine is the Matthew A. Romasco Trust, and then I've got a date to it. Some people like to be more creative. I've done a trust with animal names. I've done a trust with dates. The May 6th Trust holds some real estate that we used to have. So there's really nothing that limits your imagination. But I tell people, be careful, because remember, you may end up having to use that name in the future and somebody writing you a check.
So Joel, what happens if all of a person's assets are not held in a trust?
Well, as Matt mentioned, one of the key reasons to have a trust is to avoid probate. Well, if you did not put your house in the name of the trust, now you have to open probate. You have to pay the probate fee, the inventory fee, and go through the paperwork of getting that. As he mentioned, you have a pour over will, which is going to bring it into the trust, but you still have to probate it before you can do that. So you just want to make sure, again, that all those things are covered. You think it through very clearly. I mean, we've had instances where individual had a trust and we were a successor trustee and we're selling that trust, everything is done, and then we find out 6 months later they had a obscure bank account over here they never named into the trust. So we had to open probate to secure those funds, bring them into the trust, and then make distribution out of the trust.
So Matt, I have a question, because I'm dealing with somebody right now who had inherited property 20 or 30 years ago. Five siblings. The deed never said how that deed was. It was, and now three siblings have passed away. The two siblings left want to sell that. So isn't it important if there's a trust or a deed, how title is taken?
Absolutely. And, you know, when we talk about deeds, it's one of the more simple documents, legal documents, similar to a will. But in so many instances, they aren't done correctly, and we don't have the correct, in this case, if it was said, they're holding as joint tenants with right of survivorship. That would be wonderful.
Yes, it would be.
So,
but it doesn't.
It doesn't.
In fact, what it was, they had to go through probate, and it just said that this property now is deeded to the five siblings. Not jointly, but equal.
Right. And tenants in common.
Yes.
And, you know, this is why it's so important that, number one, people understand that they need to spend some time with their documents. And number two is they need to really look at this while they're well, while they can make rational decisions, and whether they can contemplate on this too. Because anytime you make these rash decisions, or if you're sick in making decisions, you usually don't have a great outcome. And the deed that you were saying is a great example of, if maybe there's a little bit more time and effort put into it, not saying that they did a bad job, but you have to be forward looking always on your documents. And as Joel said, that's part of being a good steward.
Well, so that's what's happened here. The three siblings that have passed away, now they want to sell this property. Probate has to be opened back up because that was an asset to them that was never dealt with at their death, when they might have probated their stuff at that time.
Right. And that's a great example. You know, sometimes we talk about trust in a global sense, but we have many trusts where they just hold one asset, like real estate. And that makes a really good transition for family members. The properties in the trust, you name the family members as beneficiaries of that trust.
So how often should trusts be reviewed? Because we talked about wills should be reviewed, you said, about every 5 years. What about trusts?
Same thing. Every 5 years, you should be opening these documents. And anytime there's any significant change in either your assets or your life, if you have another child, if you go through a divorce, if you're in a situation where you're becoming ill, one of the biggest ones I've seen is people have been adopting children and they don't even think about redoing their estate planning documents.
What do you mean? What do they have to do or should do?
Well, if you adopt a child, you may want to name that child as a beneficiary. If you've gone through the decision of adopting that child, becoming part of your family, maybe it's time to add that child also as a beneficiary. And it's so often, and I'm sure Joel's seen this too, where somebody will come in and they'll say, you know, we adopted this child, but we didn't put him in the document. And now we're finding that there's a big gap. And usually it's the next generation. You know, the parents will say, I want a share to go to all my grandchildren. Well, this adopted child is now part of their family structure, but sometimes it's the way the law is written, that child may not be included.
So in a will, you made out this will, you're young, and you talk about you have like two children, but you could say any future children, that would help if you said that?
That would help. And I like forward looking in my documents. So there's very infrequently where I will say it goes to the children's name. I'll say it gets equally distributed between my children if that's what the client wants. Mm-hmm. Or the term children not only means any current children, but any future children or adopted children.
Okay.
So there's no misunderstanding. Because really, when you're drafting these documents, not do you need to understand them, but who is reviewing them in the future needs to understand
them.
That's
probably the most important part.
Yep.
It really is, because you're really drafting this a lot of times for other people to review.
So what all is the information that a person needs to consider when they're making the trust? I mean, we've been talking about, but what's real important?
So the first really important thing is whether you need a trust or not. And that's the biggest decision. And like we said, I can't stress enough, a majority of people do not need trust. A lot of the people I have trust right now probably never needed them or don't need them anymore. The other thing is, if you are going to do a trust, you really have to have a good list of your assets and know how they're going to be funded into the trust. Finally, you need to decide where those assets are going to be going and what the contingencies are. The most important out of all these decisions, though, and we'll talk about this later too when we talk about powers of attorney, you need to pick reliable people to be in charge when you're no longer able to act. So the term is successor trustees, alternative to successor trustees. And this is a hard job, so you have to pick the right people.
So Joel, if a person wants to make a trust, How do they start the process, and who do they need to contact?
Like Matt mentioned earlier about, you know, there's a lot of things on the internet, but you wouldn't want to go there. You'd want to go to a local attorney, someone who you hopefully you know and trust. If you need some counsel with that and guidance, you can always call our department at the Michigan Conference of Seventh-day Adventists, Planned Giving Trust Services. That number is 517-316-1520. And we'll be glad to answer questions you might have. And if we can help facilitate that process, we will do that. What we'll do is refer you to one of our attorneys, either Matt Romashko, Patty McKinney, or Vern Elger. They will assess your situation and determine if you really need a trust or not.
Because that's the first thing people need to do, is what I'm hearing Matt say too. You need to figure out if you need one. And that's by having the right questions asked of them.
Correct.
It really is. And that's why you want to talk to somebody that does this all the time. That's what I love about Joel's department. They look at estate planning documents and have these discussions.
So I heard you say, Joel, you know, you don't want to go on the internet. But if you just want to start knowing something, I mean, I would think I'd look it up, but then I'd have more questions. That's why I'd want to call somebody.
Yeah, and they can call, and we, like I said, we will answer what we can, and we will not practice law. We'll refer that to the attorneys, but we can help you at least to maneuver through some of the terminology and get you in contact with someone that can, an attorney that can determine what you really need.
Well, listeners, I hope you've gotten some education from this. And if you have questions, you can call Joel Nephew's Office of Planned Giving and Trust Services. That number is 517-316-1520. And this was part two of a four-part series. Today was about trust. Part one was about will and last testaments. And our series is called, Is Your Estate Planned? And Tom, this is great information for our listeners.
Stay tuned for all the rest of our series.